I'd like to thank Spencer Catering for supplying food. Today's Navi Shir is sponsored by Mr. Steve Newman and family. And again, we're on now straight, Be'ez Hashem, until the end of July.
Since there are no Svarim available, that gives me a free hand to do what I want. I wish I would have known about this in advance. I could have been a little more creative. Anyway, I also have to give a Yashar Koach to everyone who's come this morning, especially during the holiday weekend. That's for me, it's not a vacation, but for you guys, that's a Mesiras Nefesh. The just to reset the stage, it's been a few weeks, and I actually left out something. When I was looking at my notes, I left out something I wanted to say, so it's my opportunity to stick it back in. We're dealing with, of course, Adon Yohu is mounting his rebellion, attempting to position himself as the successor to David HaMelech. And there's a plan that is between Bathsheba, between Nathan HaNavi and Bathsheba, to try to get David to do something about it. And first, Bathsheba is going to come to the king, and then immediately afterwards, Nathan HaNavi is going to follow him back up. And we discussed the fact that they had planned out their strategy and emerges from the psukim. And the Rabbah points out several places that they planned the strategy down to every detail, every psychological nuance, leaving no stone unturned. When you're dealing with something important, you don't just do a chap-lap job, just so I made an effort. You have to really try to figure it out and do it right. So Bathsheba is the quote-unquote good cop. She's coming assuming David HaMelech to be innocent and not and to be wonderful. And we'll see that Nathan HaNavi is going to come in the critical mode. So, but in the meantime, Bathsheba slips in all the various things that she needs to slip in. So she mentions the Shvua, she mentions the fact that Shlomo is right to be the king, and that he's entitled to have, Hu Yeshev Al Kisi, he's entitled to have a throne as secure as David HaMelech is. She goes on to say that Adonio Malach Vata Adoni HaMelech Lo Yodata. So in this pasuk, and this I didn't mention last time, the Barbanel explains the purpose of this pasuk was to increase or to draw attention in the eyes of David HaMelech to the severity of Adoniyahu's sin. That he went ahead and took such a great step as making himself king without consulting with David. V'Adoni HaMelech lo yadata. And again, this sort of closes the door on any excuse that Adoniel may have had. If Adoniel really believed that his cause was legitimate, then why didn't he discuss it with David HaMelech and get an outright haskama from David? By doing it behind David's back demonstrates that he knew very well that the king did not approve, and he did it anyway, and that makes him an outright rebel, a Morad B'Malchus, and therefore deserves immediate response. And then she goes on to describe how he sacrificed all the korbanos and made a very big public statement, and how he invited certain people, and certain people are following him, and did not invite Shlomo. Then she gives him, Atah Adoni HaMelech, you should know that everybody's looking to you to see what will happen. So as we mentioned last time, she doesn't just complain, but she gives an etza, she gives a strategy what to do about the complaint. And that's the difference between a constructive criticism and a complaint. When you complain without any solution, it's just complaining. There's no solution, so live with it. But she's pointing out that there is a solution, since all of Kaiso is loyal to David HaMelech, and they're waiting to see what he will do, then he has the power to be able to correct this. We're actually up to Pasuk Chaf Aleph. This is the last Pasuk of Bathsheba's presentation. So Bathsheba ends with the following: V'ha'ya kishchav Adoni HaMelech im avosav. It will come to pass that when my master, the king, rests with his father, passes away, V'ha'yisi ani uveni Shlomo chatoim, and I and my son Shlomo will be chatoim. Now we are used to translating the word chatoim as sinners. But that's not the literal meaning of the word. And it isn't quite simple how you fit that in the context. Why will we be sinners when David dies? So So there are a number of different interpretations of this pasuk amongst the Mefarshim. We'll go through several of them. The literal meaning of chatoim does not mean sin, but means to be missing, to be lacking something. And in fact, the reason why chait refers to sin is because when a person sins, he is missing out. He is lacking, he's failing to achieve his purpose in this world. So the by translating chatoim in the literal way, albeit the unusual way, it's rarely used in that context, the meaning of the pasuk could be relatively simple. She's saying that when you pass away, I and my son Shlomo will be lacking, will be missing that which is rightfully ours. The Shlomo ought to be the king, but if you don't do anything about it, that Daniel is going to get away with this plan, and he'll end up being the king, and we'll be missing out. This is the way Rashi and the Mitzudas learned the pasuk. I'm not the... Okay. The Radak has several possibilities. Translating it in the more common usage, if less literal, meaning sinners. So how is it that when David passes away, we'll be sinners? People will say that we are sinners, says Radak, because a lot of people knew that Shlomo was promised the Melucha. And people, some people knew about the Nevuah of Nathan and Navi, others knew about the promise that David HaMelech had made. And people will see that he ended up not getting the throne. They would attribute that to his sin. If Hashem said that he should be king, why is he not king? It must be Gorm Lo HaChet. He must have done some terrible chet that caused him to lose the Melucha. So we will end up being viewed in the eyes of the world. That's what it means. Aniva Vayisi Ani Uvni Chatoim, Ani Uvni Shlomo Chatoim, we'll be viewed in the eyes of the world as sinners. Because that would be their explanation as to why we didn't end up getting the Melucha. Radak offers an alternative shat. We find very often in Navi that when you're speaking to somebody that you need to respect, such as a king, so you don't talk about the king, you talk about yourself. But you're really referring to the other party. This is a certain respectful way of speaking. So the implication here is, what that really means is that you, David, will be a sinner. Because you are supposed to make sure that Shlomo becomes the king. And if you don't do anything about it, Daniel becomes the king, that's your fate. So rather, but you don't talk like that to a king. For more than one reason. We will attribute it to Kavod and Derech Eretz. There might be other reasons why you wouldn't talk to a king that way. I don't know if they applied to David HaMelech. But Yeh Masha Yeh, it would be the Derech Kavod to speak to the king and be Tola the Avla on yourself. So David was supposed to understand from that what she's saying is it's going to be potentially your chait. So these are some of the interpretations. We have more. Chatoim, in the literal sense, we will be missing out on the Melucha. As a sinner, either we will be considered sinners, because that's how people will explain why we didn't get the Melucha, or you, David HaMelech, will be a sinner, and I don't like to mention that before, so I make it as if it's me, but I'm really talking about you, because you should not have allowed that to happen. The Rabbah gives a fourth alternative. Rabbah says that what this means is we will be treated as if we are sinners. Because you could be pretty sure that one of the first orders of business that Adoniel is going to take care of is to get rid of Bathsheba and Shlomo. So he will trump up charges. He will figure out some excuse to call us sinners and get rid of us. So what she's saying to David HaMelech is that our lives are at stake. That because we will be treated by Adon Yahu as a sinner. It's interesting, in contrast, we'll see eventually, I don't know if we'll get to it this year or not, this month or not, but when in fact the revolution of Adon Yahu is foiled and Shlomo does become king, Shlomo was not going to take action against Adon Yahu And he was told, Lech Lebeitecha, you go back home. It's only when Adonai made a second attempt to get the Melucha that Shlomo got rid of him. So the contrast in at least the expectation, it didn't actually happen, but the expectation, and clearly indicated in the Psukim, that Adonijahu would have killed Shlomo and Bathsheba on trumped up charges, whereas Shlomo himself didn't even kill Adonijahu on real charges. He gave him a second chance. It's only when he tried again that Shlomo took action. So that's the fourth pshat. We'll stop at half a minion. No, maybe not. Maybe we'll go to Rove of a minion. Fifth pshat. This is also in the Rabag. The Rabag says another possibility is that we will be sinners, and this is an interesting kind of interpretation, because if we don't do anything to prevent Adonijahu from being a king, it will be a tremendous bizayon to David HaMelech, and for that matter to Bathsheba, and the world will view David as a sinner, and that will be our sin. In other words, what they're suggesting is that it's not simply for personal motives that we want to make sure that Shlomo becomes king, but if Shlomo does not become king, if you recall the history of the birth of Shlomo, was basically what had happened was David's main chet, his one chet, was the ma'aseh with Bathsheba, which exactly how you interpret it, the Gemara tells us that he desired Bathsheba. She wasn't really an Ashishish. She wasn't really married to Uriah, because when people went to battle, they used to give their wives a divorce. But morally, it was improper. She was supposed to be waiting for Uriah to come back. And this was the chait of David HaMelech. Bathsheba became pregnant from the first relationship that she had with David HaMelech, and that child died. David HaMelech wanted to marry Bathsheba, and she refused. She's saying, the child died because of the chait. I don't want anything to do with it. And David HaMelech, that was why David HaMelech promised her that any child would be born will be the successor to the throne. And in fact, the Navi came and gave him his name Shlomo. Shlomo comes from the Lashon Shalom Hashem. That Hashem has made peace. That the chait has been forgiven. But if that promise will not be fulfilled and Shlomo would not become king, everyone would say this whole thing was a fake out. There was no forgiveness. It was just an avera, and David was a chote, and Bathsheba was a chote. Shouldn't have married him, and that's why the child didn't become king. So in effect, we will be responsible for viewing us all as sinners and the product of sin. That's David, but David will be dead. But David, Bathsheba, and Shlomo. So the chait he's talking about is actually the chait of Bathsheba. Of David and Bathsheba years ago, that will be resuscitated. That people may have believed that David was sin, and actually we see from Chazal that people did not. There were all those who did not believe that David was forgiven until the Beis Hamikdash was built. When the Beis Hamikdash was built, and they tried to bring the Aron into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the doors of the Kodesh HaKadoshim slammed shut, and they couldn't open it. Says Shlomo HaMelech davened 24 tefillos and still couldn't get the doors open. So then he said, "Su shar mashechem v'yavo melech hakavod," and Tehillim. And then that backfired. The doors got angry at him, says the Gemara, because they didn't know who he meant by melech hakavod. Maybe he's talking about himself. So then he immediately says, "Hashem izuz v'gibor." So they didn't get angry at him anymore, but they still didn't open. Until he said Zichru Eschazdei David Avi, or whatever the exact Lashon is, I think I'm butchering it a little bit, but until he invoked the Schus of David HaMelech, then immediately the doors opened. At that moment, all of Kali Yisrael knew that the Chet was forgiven. But even that means before that, there were still Yesh V'Yesh. Some people thought yes, some people thought no. So Bathsheba is saying you could be sure that if Shlomo was not made king, that everyone's going to believe that the Chet was not forgiven. So that is V'yisani Shlomo Chaton, means I and Shlomo and you too, for that matter, although you'll no longer be alive, we'll all be considered as sinners or the product of sin. So that's number five. Mahalach number six, and I'm not suggesting that there aren't others. I can't read what I wrote here, who says it. Somebody. This Mahalach suggests that the sin that Bathsheba and Shlomo will have is by failing to persuade David to do something about it. Really, it's David's sin. If David does not install Shlomo as king, and ensure Shlomo to be king, then David is sinning. He's violating his own Shvuah, and he's violating the Nevuah that he heard from Nathan HaNavi. But we, Bathsheba and Shlomo, Bathsheba primarily, are in a position to do something about it. When somebody has the ability to influence somebody else to do the right thing or to avoid doing the wrong thing, and you fail to exert that influence, that itself is a sin. If you had the ability to object and you didn't object, that would be a sin. So he's saying, Bathsheba and Shlomo are saying, if you sort of ask question, why do we have the gall to come and approach you and tell the king what to do? Now, if she would simply inform the king that Daniel was doing, it's one level, but Bathsheba went much further than that. She's suggesting to David what to do and pushing him to do something. So you may wonder, why am I so tzehitzed, as they say? Why am I so worked up? I'm telling the king. She should have informed the king of the Mitzvah, of what's going on in the world. Daniel's running into him. Let David decide what to do. Why am I pushing? Because I feel a responsibility. And that responsibility is that if I can persuade you to do the right thing and I don't, then it's going to be my sin as well. And according to this interpretation, this is a very significant argument, because the point of presenting this is to persuade David to action. There is in a certain sense, again, Bathsheba is using all the different arguments, but she's not wasting her breath. In other words, it's conceivable that all the other arguments may not be sufficient to accomplish her goal, and this might be the turning point. This might be what persuades her. Listen, I have the right to tell you what to do. I have to protect you from Chayt. And David will understand that. And David may not be motivated by the personal interest of Bathsheba. She has another reason to come. It's my own son Shlomo. She has another reason to come. You made a Shvuah to me. If those things fail to move David, this might. So that means this is really a very, very compelling and powerful attitude. The truth of the matter is that if people genuinely and sincerely have that attitude, it's a very, very powerful form of influence. The reason why it typically doesn't work so well is because mostly when we're telling other people what to do, we're really not concerned about protecting them and saving them from sin. We have other motives. Whether it's our own personal benefit, whether we want to feel superior. There are many different motives that push people to criticize others. But a criticism that really stems from a genuine feeling to help that other person, prevent them from sin, is a very powerful force. And to sort of take it into a different sphere, I once attended a session on fundraising. I don't know how much I learned in that session, but I was very impressed in the presenter. Was talking about different techniques and things that he did, and this person was involved quite a bit in approaching totally unaffiliated secular Jews. In fact, he used to look up like the list of CEOs of public companies, and when he found a Jewish name, would call them. And every once in a while, he'd get through. In fact, he told a story about one time he got through to CEO. The guy took his phone call right away, the first phone call. And he started talking with him, and he ended up having a meeting with him, and eventually got a major, major gift. Then when he got the money, he asked him, listen, why did you take my phone call? So he said, to tell you the truth, it was a mistake. I was expecting a phone call with somebody who had a similar name, and he wasn't paying attention when the secretary told so-and-so was online. He thought that was the call that he was expecting. And then he was too embarrassed to hang up on the guy and say it's the wrong person. So he got the whole conversation. So he took the call by mistake. That's what happened. So, however, you know, that was the success story. But quite frequently, even if he did get through to somebody and spoke to them, they weren't interested. They wouldn't give. So he made it his business to call back 2 or 3 weeks later after they said no and speak to them and say, listen, I'm not going to ask you again. I respect your decision. But I'd like to know what led you to that decision. What made you make that decision? So, and then he asked the audience, why do you think I did that? So, of course, I thought the idea is, you know, you find out what pitch works, what pitch doesn't work, so you know for the next guy. Which is, of course, what his answer was. But before anyone had a chance to answer, he gave his own answer. He said, you know, when I go to see somebody, it's a big responsibility. Some of these people, it might be their only chance to really do a mitzvah. Who knows if it'll turn their lives around? I can't afford to make the wrong pitch and let them down. It's a, you know, this is their chance. So I got to know what to do. So I said to him, it may help you also. You're saying this is their chance. He said, well, not really. You know, a certain percentage I'm going to get. Sooner or later I'll get the money from what? Not from this guy, from the other guy. So I'm not worried about that. But this guy might not have another chance. And I thought he was really genuine. Like it came out. You could see the guy meant it. That's why he was a successful fundraiser. Because he really believed, and Chazal tell us that, more than the usher does for the ani does for the usher. Because the most the usher could do is give him a shtikal olam hazeh. But the ani is giving the usher olam haba. But it's easier said than done. If a person really feels that, I'm helping you, it has a much more powerful impact. And this is really the concept. And the truth is, there's a Gemara that says this. The Gemara says that at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Darshan Sepsukim, but basically the gist of it is that the Gemara says that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was Metzavah the Malachim to put the letter Tuf on the foreheads of the Tzaddikim, so that they should be spared from the punishment of the Churban. And the Gemara later discusses what Tuf stands for. They kept the Torah from Aleph till Tuf. Tuf stands for Tichya, you should live. But whatever the reasoning was. So the Midas Adin came and said, what's the difference between these people and those people? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, because those people are Rishayim and these people are Tzadikim Gemurim. That's the Lashon of the Gemara. Tzadikim Gemurim, real complete Tzadikim. So the Midas HaDin says, why weren't they Mocha? Why didn't they try to object and stop the others from doing it? So it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Galui V'yadua Lefanai, I know for a fact that even if they would have been Mocha, it wouldn't have helped. So the Midas HaDin said, Im lefanecha hu galui lifnei mi galui. To you, you HaKadosh Baruch Hu know that it wouldn't have helped. How did they know that it wouldn't have helped? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're right. And he immediately reversed the decree and said that the Tuf should stand for Tammuz. They should die. And not only that, that they were punished first. Tosfos points out on the spot that if you do know that the person is not going to listen, then Yitaka don't have to be Malcha. But here was a situation where they really didn't know. There are a number of Rishonim who also learn that where you are Choshesh, where you have reason to believe that being Malcha is going to make things worse. Sometimes the way it works, if you be Malcha, people are Nischazek and they do, you know, Lahakas, go even worse. Or there's other situations, like, for example, if you're Malcha in certain things where you know that it's going to be just laughed at. So in addition to the original chait, there's going to be an additional chait that they're laughing at the Gedaliah Dor, Talmid HaChachamim. It may not be worth it, but it's a pretty serious thing. That the possibility of stopping others is considered to be quite a serious chait. So this was the final pitch of Bathsheba. Immediately, at that moment, Natan Navi shows up. V'hine, as per their plan. V'hine odenu medaberesim ha-melech. She was still speaking to the king. V'Natan Hanavi ba. And Natan Navi came. Vayagidu la melech lemor, and they told the king, saying, I guess the guards, whoever is outside the door, hine nosan anavi, vayovo lifnei hamelech, vayishtachu la melech ha'apa vortza. Now, nosan anavi's approach is a little different than Bathsheba. Bathsheba was not announced, right? Bathsheba, as the wife of the king, was able to come in. So, but Nosan Navi, more distant relationship, had to wait until he was invited in. The Pasuk doesn't actually say it, but we see from the Pasukim later that at the time Nosan Navi entered, Bathsheba left. And the Ralbag points out this was another part of the plan, because they did not want David to realize that they had been in collusion, that they've been in discussion with each other. They wanted to seem to David HaMelech like they each came separately. So normally, if the Navi comes to speak to the king, it's not Bathsheba's business. Who knows what the Navi wants to speak about? In this case, it happened to be that it was Bathsheba's business, but how does she know? So she left respectfully, as if to say, listen, I'm not going to, whatever Nathan has to say, I'm leaving. So she left when Nathan Navi entered. However, Mefarshim point out that when Bathsheba entered the king's palace, David HaMelech said, Malach, what's bothering you? When Nathan HaNavi entered, David doesn't say anything. And Nathan has to begin his speech uninvited. That's because David HaMelech already knew why Nathan HaNavi was there. And that he may not have known whether there was collusion, but he realized Nathan HaNavi showed up. He just heard about Daniel's rebellion. He knows Nathan is a Navi who had said that Shlomo should be king. So David HaMelech already knew before Nathan opened his mouth what he was here to talk about. But he maybe did not know that they had conspired. If I use that term, sounds a bit harsh. Now, Nathan and Navi's approach to David HaMelech, as we mentioned a number of times, is different than Bathsheba's. He comes with almost an assumption of David HaMelech's guilt, accusing him. And again, this is part of the plan, to approach from both angles. If one doesn't work, the other will work. So, Vayomer Nathan. So Nathan says, Adoni HaMelech, my master the king, Ata Amarta Adonio Yimach Acharei, did you say that Adonio should be the king? For who Yeshe Balkisi, and he should sit on my throne? So you hear already a different kind of approach. Bathsheba says, look, Adonio is sitting on the throne and you don't know about it. Although Nathan doesn't say outright that you do know about it, but he asks him a question, what's going on over here? Did you tell Adonio to do this? Asking a question is already a certain implication of suspicion, of accusation. So this is how Nathan HaNavi is saying, what's going on here? Did you tell Adonio to do this? And he goes on to describe basically the same event that Bathsheba described, but he threw in a couple of extra details, and this is what he said in the first place. Vanochi Milesius, or I will fill in your words. So he says as follows, Ki Yorad Hayom, he went down today, Vayizvach Shor Umari Vitzon Larov, and he sacrificed a great many sheep and cattle and and he called all the sons of the king, of the Surrey, Hatzava, and the officers of the army, of Yasser HaKohen, and to Yasser the Kohen, Vihinam, Ochlim, Vishosim, Lefanov, they are eating and drinking before him, Vayomru, and they have said, Yechi HaMelech Adoniyahu, long live the king Adoniyahu. So the implication here is, given again the accusatory nature of his presentation, he says he called all these people. The implication is, how is it possible that Adoniyahu would have the chutzpah to call all these people if it wasn't with the king's consent? So did you say it because? What's simply? Did you tell him because he did this? In other words, Nathan is conveying the message. I can't believe that Adoniyahu would have called all the Bnei HaMelech and the Sarei Hatzava and the Yasser HaKohen and everybody else, and have this big party and was eating and drinking, if it didn't have David HaMelech's consent. Now, this serves a dual purpose. One purpose is to set this psychological tone of accusing David, so David should feel a responsibility to clear his name, to respond. And the second thing is to heighten in the eyes of David HaMelech the sin of Adon Yehu. Because of nothing, another because I can't believe it's impossible that they would have done such a thing without the king's consent. Of course, he did do it without the king's consent. So it demonstrates what a serious chait it is, that the Nasan Hovi can't even imagine that anyone would have the chutzpah to do such a thing without the, and yet he did. David knows full well that Adon Yehu did it without his consent. So it serves the dual purpose of highlighting the chait of Adon Yehu, at the same time putting, so to speak, David HaMelech a little bit on the defensive, that he should feel the need to take action in order to clear his own name. This little detail, Vayomru Yechi HaMelech Adon Yehu, was not mentioned by Bathsheba. So here we have one of the examples of Milesius Devarai, and this too, as the Rabag explains, is part of the plan. Everything was worked out to the detail. There is something that has a more of a powerful effect when you hear a new piece of information. If everything would have been said in the first round, it has a certain impact, and then if it's repeated, okay, it has an additional impact. But when it's repeated with new information, it has a stronger roshim than if it was all said at once. So Bathsheba deliberately left out some of the details to leave room for Nasan HaNavi to fill them in. So this is one of them, that's Yechi HaMelech Adon Yehu. Now, we did mention earlier that this expression, Yechi HaMelech Adon Yehu, was not actually proclaimed by Adon Yehu himself. Adon Yehu said, Misnatei Loma Ani Emlo, I will become the king. He didn't declare himself to be the king right now, although he acted like a king. But the response of the people who were at the party was Yechi HaMelech Adon Yehu, which he did not stop, and in a sense he encouraged. But Nasan HaNavi is holding him accountable for it, because it's a poor excuse. You cannot set the stage to get people to do something and then excuse yourself by saying, well, I never said it. Right? If you do everything, you do all the trimmings, I invite everybody and all the big wigs to this big party, and I sacrifice huge numbers of korbanos, which is typical for a king to do when he becomes king. And, you know, I have the 50 people, remember, running in front of me. And I basically act like a king, but I never said I'm a king. Never said it, you can't quote me. Now your followers, quote unquote, get carried away. You can't excuse yourself. You're the gorim, you set the stage. So it's just as bad as if you did say I'm the king, and then they said, you see, HaMelech Adon Yehu. Next pasuk, Vili ani avdecha, I, your servant. There's an extra wording here, which we'll get to in a moment. Vili ani, it could have said vani avdecha or vili. You didn't need to say both. Vili ani avdecha, ule tzadok hakohen, and tzadok the kohen, l'vnayahu ben Yoyada, and v'nayahu ben Yoyada, shlomo avdecha, and to your servant Shlomo, lo kara, we're not called. Here too, Nasan HaNavi is filling in additional details that Bathsheba left out. Bathsheba only said that Shlomo was not called, didn't mention Tzadok HaKohen, V'Nayahu Ben Yoyada, and Nasan HaNavi. So he's again highlighting, look at the invitation list. Right? Those who have Shaychus to Shlomo are not being called. So it's pretty clear that this was intended to make Adon Yehu a king, and if that's the case, I have Tainus, and we'll see in the next pasuk, he Tainus directly against David HaMelech. Now, why do we have this expression of Li Ani Avdecha? Some of the Mefarshim learn that this is also part of the accusation. And what he's saying is, David HaMelech, if you made the decision for Adon Yehu to be the king, why in the world would you have not told me? Why is it you told all these other people and you didn't tell me? I am your servant. Li, ani avdecha, I am your servant. I am loyal to you. I'm the Navi. I'm the one, in fact, who told you about Shlomo in the first place. Don't you think it would have been the right thing to do if there was a change in plans to tell me. How could you leave me out? I'm insulted. So this is part of the accusation. You told the other Bnei Melech, you told Rav Yosser, you told Yoav, you told all these people, and you didn't tell me? I, your servant? I am so loyal to you? How could you have not told me, and you didn't tell Bnei Eru ben Yoyada? You didn't tell Tzadok HaKohen? What's going on over here? So that is part of the presentation. There is a phenomenal Gemara based on this pasuk that's really, almost mind-boggling the extent of this particular midah we're going to go into. The Gemara says as follows: Shishtin tachli matya lekacha. A person would rather get hit 60 times with a stick. Then to hear the sound of his friends and he himself does not eat. In other words, if you're not invited to the party, all your friends are invited and you're left out. A guy would rather get hit 60 times with a stick than be left out of the party. The feeling of being left out is a terrible, difficult, painful feeling. Where does the drasha come from? So I think, and I saw actually some more recent mefarshim say the same pshat, that really al pi derech eretz, Nosson should not have mentioned himself first. Certainly Tzadok HaKohen, who is the Kohen Gadol designate, should have been mentioned before him. And al pi anova, really the derech is to mention yourself last. He should have said, Tzadok HaKohen v'el ben yoyado shlomo abdecha v'li ani abdecha lo kara. The fact that he mentioned himself first indicates that subconsciously there was something bothering him that I didn't get invited. And it came out of his mouth first. So a person who is not invited to a party feels a terrible hurt. Now the idea that a person left out of the chevra feels hurt is pretty simple. Right? Everyone knows that. You know, we ourselves hopefully didn't experience it. Sometimes you do. You know, your friends are doing something, you're left out, it feels painful. Our children, when our children are left out, we feel the pain. But listen to where the Gemara is applying it. First of all, supposing Nosson HaNavi was invited to the party, do you think he would have gone? He considered this party to be an act of revolution, rebellion, which it was, against David and against HaKadosh Baruch and against his own Nebuah. He would have been the last person to go to. It was rishus. It was chait. He had no desire and no interest to go. And we're not talking about some little kid. We're talking about Nosson HaNavi. Now, just figure out the cheshbon. David HaMelech ruled for 40 years. Right? This is the last year of his rule. The nevuah from Nosson HaNavi was a Navi at the time that David already became king. He was already a Navi. So he's not a youngster. And he's been at enough parties in his day that he doesn't need another party. And he's a Navi. Do we know what a Navi is? Right, a Navi is so far removed from the physical world. Right, if anyone's ever seen, you know, the Mesiris Yesharim is based on the Brisa of Pinchas Ben Yair and all the different levels that a person could reach. A person could reach, start with Zihirus to Zrizus. There's a whole long list. If you ever went through the Sefer, you'll see that we give up, like basically at step one, maybe step two. Right. The Mesiris Yesharim stopped at Yiras Chet because they said that was the highest that he could figure. But after that comes Ruach HaKodesh and then comes Tlias HaMeisim, but that's not Nevuah. Because in the time of Pinchas Ben Yair, there was no Nevuah anymore. So the highest level in the Mesiris Yesharim is at least three steps below, or maybe more, but at least three steps below the level of Nevuah. So we're talking about a person who is Naki and Chassid and Anav and Yirei Chet, and all his goal is the only thing he wants to do in life is to serve Hashem. The last thing in the world he needs is an invitation to such a party. And there's no doubt that he would not have gone. But still, at some subconscious level, I doubt that it was anything conscious, but something hidden, buried in his heart, it caused a certain pain. Enough pain that it came out of his mouth, Li Ani Avdecha, first, rather than saying it last. The second example, the Gemara tells us, is Avram Avinu. What happened by Avram Avinu? It says, Avram Avinu, when Yitzchak got married, so the next parsha said, Avram Avinu sent the message to bring back Keturah, and he married Keturah. So it is a connection. When Yitzchak got married, he got married. So what's the Gemara saying? When Yitzchak got married, Avram Avinu felt left out, and therefore, he also wanted to get married. Now, whatever we said about Nasan Anavi applies at least double to Avram Avinu. And what do you mean Avram Avinu got left out? It was his son's wedding. Right? You're not left out of your son's wedding. I've never been at my son's wedding, but I've been at my daughter's wedding. You're not left out, but you know what? You're not quite the same center of attention as the chassan is. The chassan is the center. I'm the father. Epis, I feel a little left out. Avram Avinu. And it was a factor in his decision to remarry Keturah. Now, I don't think it was the only reason. I'm sure there were many cheshbonos. But it was enough of a factor that the pasuk written next to each other and it's noted by Chazal. There was some feeling in the heart, of Avram Avinu, that he felt Epis a little left out of his own son's wedding because he wasn't a chassan. So therefore, how sensitive we are to this feeling of being left out. It's something to keep in mind because you really, really have to take that into consideration. That there are many kinds of circumstances, some minor, some major. The idea of leaving somebody out, sometimes maybe it has to be done. You can't invite everybody to the chasana. And you can't invite everyone to the bar mitzvah. But you got to be careful. It puts us in an unfortunate situation. I don't really know the answer. But somebody once commented to me, I have a feeling he's right, that any given chasana, he says, there's probably 150 people there or more who were only invited because the Bali Simcha were afraid that they would insult him if they didn't invite him. And they only came because they were afraid that the Bali Simcha would be insulted if they didn't come. Now, if they could just somehow work it out. But the problem is, it's hard to know who's who. I just recounted to Rabbi Harris, we mentioned talking about a certain person. I remember when I got married, a certain person I had been quite close with. We were in Eretz Yisrael together the year before I got married, and he was learning out of town. I got married the following December, and he had been out of town since Elul. And when I was making my invitation list, I forgot about him because he wasn't currently, in New York, and he wasn't on any of the standard lists. You look at the names, and I partially forgot about him. To complicate matters, he happened to be back in New York during the time of my chasana. And it really, our relationship was never the same. After he was insulted that he wasn't invited, and although when I found that he was town, I called him up and invited him and so on, but it wasn't the same, it was the afterthought. And never really quite got over it. So it's a scary thing. On the other hand, you can't just spend unlimited amounts of money. So it's a hard job. But being left out, it's not just a party. It's any kind of thing, activity. Different situations where somebody feels left out. It's a very sensitive and very delicate thing.